This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. What is happening in Venezuela, and how could it impact us here in San Antonio? Why should you be paying attention? Venezuela has been in a downward spiral for decades, and it could get a lot worse, sending shockwaves through Latin America. Those shockwaves could reach us here in San Antonio. It's also impacting people with loved ones in Venezuela, and also our oil markets. But it's also a major humanitarian crisis, could turn into a bloody civil war. Human suffering is a real thing, and we should all be concerned with what's happening in Venezuela. If you've got a question or a comment as we talk about this topic this afternoon, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're joined this afternoon by Ana Ramos. She is a Venezuelan journalist, and she is now an active member of the Venezuelan Association in San Antonio. Kenny de Santiago Montgomery is a Venezuelan-American citizen, also a member of the Venezuelan Association in San Antonio. And with us on the line from Buenos Aires is Iñaki Sagazozu. I'm sorry for that pronunciation. He's a professor of political science at Texas Tech University, specializing in Venezuelan politics. Welcome to The Source, all of you. Great to have you here. So let me ask you, Kenny, off the bat, tell me about the Venezuelan Association in San Antonio.
Well, AFSA is a nonprofit organization whose main purpose is to be the meeting point for the Venezuelan community in San Antonio, Texas, also to inform and provide Venezuelans with services and resources in the area, and to promote the Venezuelan culture and its Latin American roots through communitarian programs and other citizens' initiatives to better everybody's life in our community. Our mission is to foster cooperation and solidarity between Venezuelan residents in the city of San Antonio and its surrounding through activities that contribute to the individual and community development, formation, transition, and integration to the new reality and adaptation to a new culture, also to promote values that define the Venezuelan culture in this region.
So about how many members do you have?
We have we had a plebiscite 2 weeks ago, and we had about close to 800 people who voted, who casted their vote, and we have about 1,500 family members, you know, in the area.
All right. Let me ask you, Professor, about what's going on in Venezuela now. What state would you describe it as it being right now?
Sorry, could you question, please?
How would you describe the state of Venezuela right now?
Well, right now there's a state of wondering what really happened this past Sunday, right? The government gave an unbelievable figure of 8 million voters, which I think most analysts do not believe. Most polls said, exit polls said that there were about 3.7 million voters. And so nobody believes the figures, but today there have been two different reports. On the one hand, a report that says that up to 5:30 p.m., there were only 3.7 million votes cast, voters attending, and a report by the firm that handles the electronic equipment that Venezuelans use to vote that said that they have reason to believe that the numbers that the electoral authority said were fake.
Now, this was
a lot of wonderment about that. And at the same time, there's a lot. The government said that they're going to swear in the Constituent Assembly. Nobody knows what's going on, what's going to happen.
Is this an attempt by Maduro to take over what's left of the government in order to install an even stronger dictatorial rule over what's left of Venezuela?
Yes, definitely. The origin of the Constituent Assembly is precisely that, the proposal to the Constituent Assembly in such beneficial terms for the government is to actually get rid of any opposition, both internal and external. And so now they're trying to carry forward, but they have this problem of credibility on the election results. A lot of dissent within the Chavismo is starting to boil over, with people asking what's happening to their votes and why can't we see those real votes.
Ana Ramos, how are you? Do you have family still in Venezuela?
Yeah, and thank you. First of all, thank you for having us, David. It's been awesome to have an option to say and let people know what's going on in Venezuela. Yes, I do have family and friends and colleagues that are still there in Venezuela.
And like, what family members do you have?
I have one sister. I have cousins and all my extended family is there.
And how much contact do you have with them?
Every day, every time, you know, it's a big concern because before we were just concerned about, you know, food and medicine, but now it's all, you know, it's their life, what we're concerned about every single minute. You never know, some of the kids or somebody goes out to just to be a peaceful protest and you don't know if they're going to make it back.
Did you have family members who were actually in the streets protesting?
Yes, I do.
And you, if you get caught, you could be in jail for 10 years.
You can. Actually have a very good friend who is actually got in jail, and he was protesting, and his face was recognized on one of the videos, and the police forces took him, put him in jail, and now he's been trying to be in trial on a military judgment, which is just...
It's a military trial. It's a
military trial, which is absolutely unconstitutional.
So it's like a kangaroo court type of thing.
It's kind of thing. You know, the Foro Penal, who's the organization, who's the ONG, who's taking care and trying to account and represent who has been taken into custody unlawfully, has, I think it's a count of 447 political prisoners at this time.
And Kenny, do you have family members still there?
Yes, the majority of my family is there.
What are you hearing from? What do they say?
It is heartbreaking, just like my friend mentioned. Right now, we're just praying a lot. And also, we are encouraging our family. It is really sad, but we need to encourage them to protest every day because it's the only opportunity that we have right now before we enter into maybe a civil war. Because Venezuelans, they're fighting for freedom. They're leaving everything they have on the streets. So It's a really sad situation, but at the same time, we need to encourage all the Venezuelan family members and friends that we have who are fighting every day and who used to be scared, but they're not scared anymore because they're pretty much lost everything.
Do you think that, is this the middle class who's rising up, or is it the entire population that is stepping forth and saying no more?
It started with the middle class, but now we have seen lately that the entire population is rising too. So it is interesting to see that we have different parts of the society protesting. We have the teachers' unions. We have the students' unions. We have all type of unions that you can think of. They're all protesting. Everybody is protesting, and this is the only way that we can unite and also fight against this awful regime.
Okay, we're going to take a break now. We're talking about the political turmoil that's escalating in Venezuela. How are Venezuelans who are living here in San Antonio, how are they affected? They have family members back home, and they are hearing from them, and they're sharing information. What's next for this embattled Latin American country? It used to be the richest country in South America, so much oil reserves, but now they are saddled with a lot of national debt, incredible inflation, problems in the streets with people protesting against a dictatorial government, a socialist dictator. What questions do you have, and what do you think the United States ought to do? Sanctions that are being imposed by the U.S. could make the economy there much worse. Is that the right move? I don't know. That's up for debate. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Venezuela. You may have seen some video on TV of people who are protesting in the streets en masse, also political opponents of the dictator, the elite president of Venezuela, Maduro. Now they've been seized and they are being held captive. And the United States, Donald Trump's White House, they're imposing sanctions on Maduro and his top echelon in the government, and what that could mean as it could hit the oil markets. A lot happening there that could impact the Texas economy, actually. We're joined by family members who live in San Antonio, who have family in Venezuela. Also, we're joined by an assistant professor of political science at Texas Tech University who specializes in Venezuelan politics. His name is Iñaki Saguzazu. And, Professor, let me ask you about the the arc of what's happening right now. People have made comparisons to what's happening in Venezuela, to what's happened in other parts of the world. I think Ukraine comes to mind. And so what is that comparison telling you?
So there's several things that happen in Venezuela, right? On the one hand, you have an increased polarization that has been boiling over the years. This polarization has led to political actors extreming their positions on both sides of the political fights, right? Both the Chavismo and the opposition have been at odds with each other for a while, and they have been taking more extreme positions up until what we are seeing right now. Then you have a governing party that is not willing to leave office, right? And as such, they're finding every single possible way in which they can hold on to power. We can see that in several places. We can see that in the United States, where you see different parties changing electoral laws or changing the way that people register to vote so that they can have a hold on power that is artificial, that is not really a true representative of what the population's preferences would be if everybody were allowed to vote. We saw it in Ukraine a few years ago when the incumbent party went to a great extent to close down the opposition, close down the parliament, and this massive protest brought back democracy. We're seeing right now in Poland as well, where there's a significant conflict in between the government and the opposition. So this is a phenomenon that is occurring. This populist phenomenon, it's not new. It's gone from way back. Populism, together with polarization, and the new ways in which politicians can stay in power by fabricating a democracy, it is what's taking sort of place nowadays.
Well, we saw eventually in the Ukraine a massive populist uprising where the people just overwhelmed the forces that were maintaining the artificial government and overwhelmed the military. Eventually, they took over.
Yes, indeed. That happened in the Ukraine. The cost of repression increased so much that the government decided to not do it. What we're seeing in Venezuela is an opposition leadership that is trying to hold on, make sure that this doesn't go completely violent, right? The government has the control of the weapons via the armed forces, via the police, but also via armed collectives that are threatening the population. And so the leadership of the opposition has tried to a certain extent, some argue that not enough, to hold on violent protests, to not promote violent protests, the way to add people to your movement is not by violence, it's by peaceful protest, right? The way that the international community has rallied to Venezuela is because they have seen that people are protesting peacefully and they're being repressed by a government that is violating pretty much every single human right.
It seems like that peaceful protest bit may be sort of... I don't know how long that's going to maintain. We're seeing some improvised explosive devices being used against some of the military police. So is that breaking down?
Well, the protests come and go, right? They at some point they're very massive. Then the government kind of scares off people with their repression. But then things like today happen, right, where everybody is very upset on the side of the opposition, even on the side of the government, by the just massive fraud that they're claiming. It's not that they changed votes, it's just that they plainly changed results after they got the votes, right, and announced whatever figure they wanted. Of course, they couldn't announce 3.7 million votes because that would have been half of what the opposition got or claims that they got in the plebiscite, in the Consulta Popular, just held 2 weeks ago. So they just made up this number, 8 million. Coincidence, it's higher than the 7.5 million votes that the opposition says they get. This is probably going to bring about a new wave of protests.
Right. And what about the humanitarian crisis? People are having trouble finding food and others' necessities. I mean, isn't that a concern?
Well, that's on top of everything that's happening, right? You have this severe humanitarian crisis. The severe health crisis, we're seeing diseases that were eradicated from Venezuela, right? because there's no vaccines, there's no medicines, hospitals have no resources, there's no food. On top of all this political crisis, you have a severe humanitarian crisis that is boiling, and it's making those that are those of lower social strata, they're on the one hand they want to protest, on the other hand they're also in some cases they feel that they're better off staying put and receiving government benefits. As those government benefits diminish, you're going to see more mobilization by the lowest social classes. Also, as the Chavismo breaks apart and more Chavistas, more and more people from the government break apart and make a bigger claim that Maduro is a dictator that is breaking away from Chavez, that might be able to move some of the lower strata that still remain loyal to former President Chavez to protest against the regime.
Right, the lower, the really poor people in Venezuela are loyal to Maduro and Chavez because he did do a lot of public spending and then bring up the lowest of the poverty into he was able to provide for them somewhat. So they still are loyal.
Yes, they did receive some benefits that they've never had. They also joined the public discourse, right? Chavez brought them into the public discourse. They had been marginalized in the past, right? So Chavez spoke a lot about the poor and about the forgotten, and that made them feel included in the process. They have, for a while, we had some social programs that were seemed promising. However, those died out of corruption, out of just sheer lack of institutionalization of the programs. And now what they have is the memory of those benefits, of that participation, of that belonging, which, honestly, they've never felt with the opposition, right?
Right.
So they don't feel represented in the opposition, and they still have this remembrance of former President Chavez.
So in regards to the humanitarian crisis, Kenny de Santiago Montgomery, what is the Venezuelan Association in San Antonio? Are y'all doing drives or anything trying to send food and medicine to Venezuela?
Yeah. Taking into account, APSA has a campaign to help Venezuela thanks to the donations of fellow Venezuelans and the San Antonio community, in which all the proceeds go to help Venezuela by sending food, medicine and medical supplies, diapers for babies, and for elderly people, formula for babies and school supplies for children. Right now, we are having a Venezuelan dancing party fundraiser taking place on August 18th from 7 p.m. to midnight at 3534 Fredericksburg Road, number 14 in San Antonio for a donation of $20. Tickets are sold in our website, avsatx.com, via PayPal. You can also access this PayPal account to leave a donation. And remember, every penny counts. We appreciate your donations and your prayers as well, because we need any type of help that we can get, I'm sorry, from the community.
Ana Ramos, what are you hearing from your relatives who are back in Venezuela? How are they getting along?
Well, it's very difficult because you don't have the certainty if you go out what's going to happen next. You know, the repression is terrible. And what you were saying before actually about the poverty and what President Chavez delivered, it was a message and it was a fantasy because actually poverty levels in Venezuela are still the same. Actually higher. So what you see now is that such middle class, called middle class, it doesn't exist anymore. It's everybody fighting on the same page on the same day just to get, you know, food, medicines, and whatever is needed to survive. But it's not only my relatives. I guess every family, you see fathers that don't want to risk their kids, but they cannot stop them from going out and protesting. So you see these fathers going out there and becoming shields of their kids, of the student movement that it's been, you know, the heart of all these protests. So it's extremely, you know, stressful to say the less.
But is the dissatisfaction with Maduro and his government is limited to the urban areas, the big cities, Caracas, or is it also in the rural areas?
No, before it was only the main cities. Now you can see it throughout the entire country, where the most remote locations and not urban locations are soon, you know, to this protest.
And people want what? What do they want?
Well, I think they want to change. They're tired. The same situation that gave power to Chavez to get to power is exactly what is going on now. You know, people are tired of promises, empty promises, the corruption, and this has been exponentially highest mess than what we had when Chavez took over. So I think people want change. People want transparency. People are tired of what's going on, and they want a real change, not only with the Chavez government forces and Maduro-Chavez forces, but also with the opposition. I think people are claiming, are making more educated choices, and I hope so.
Well, how are people getting their information? Anna, is there pre-public media? I mean, is it on TV, or who's controlling that?
It's amazing. You know, as a journalist, to me, this is it's sad to say, but it's one of the most amazing things that you're learning from and experiences from a journalist's point of view, because every single citizen has become a reporter. So the journalist's job at this point is also to source and replicate and share what it's verified. So it's a tremendous effort from every single community and every single citizen in Venezuela.
So is there internet in Venezuela? Yes?
It is. There is internet on and off, very slow, and the government tries to manipulate the speed of the connection and block sites, and there are some TV stations international that are blocked from being watched in Venezuela. But, you know, with YouTube and social media and everything now, people get away. Get around it.
And people, are they texting back and forth? Like,
yes.
where you can find goods?
Definitely. Not only goods, it's medicines. And, you know, something as simple as insulin or high blood pressure medicine, you text and I have 2 pills, I have 3 pills, I can share this. I mean, to that point.
And so, Kenny, I guess people are coming together, trying to unite and find ways to get through this situation. And here in San Antonio, with the organization, you are trying to provide some support. And there are people now who are not Venezuelans coming to you and saying, I want to help.
Yes, we have our neighbors, people in the community who's been extremely supportive to the Venezuelan cause. So we appreciate that, because they just come with a formula for babies, diapers, elderly people who come who are aware of the situation, and they even share their own diapers because they know they're older, elderly people who are in need of basic needs like diapers, formula, medicine, and all that.
And those will arrive there, and where will they go?
They do arrive. We send them through a private carrier. So that's the only way to do it. So it is a lot of work and dedication, because we have to gather all the donations, and after that we have to pack everything, and we have a private carrier who takes care of sending everything and arrive safe in Houston.
Okay, and also the donations, I guess how does that arrive? I mean, how do we make sure that doesn't end up in the hands of the government or someone else?
Well, it's through private organizations in Venezuela, through Catholic organizations, educational organizations who receive the donations. It doesn't go through the government.
And we'll make sure they get into the hands of the people who really
yes.
need it. Okay, all right, we're going to take another break. We're talking about Venezuela, what's happening there. It's a country that's in turmoil. People are rising up, trying to fight a socialist dictator who is trying to turn the country's government into one that's more like Cuba than what the country has had a long history of democracy and also enjoying freedoms, but those could be taken away. How you can support them, we have an organization here in San Antonio called the Venezuelan Association. And you can find them online and figure out if you want to donate to them if you want. We're going to continue the conversation and talk to our experts about what's happening on the ground there. What are we hearing from the people who are living through this nightmare? And you can give us a call with your comments or your observations. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Food riots, political riots, electricity rationing, triple-digit inflation. It's rocking the oil-rich Venezuela. There is a San Antonio Venezuelan community. They are raising funds and collecting food and medicine and other items to help those who are still living back home. And we're talking about what's happening in Venezuela, trying to learn more about the situation, how they got there, particularly how it used to be the richest country in South America. America, and what happened to that? So we're talking with Professor Inaki Sagazozu. He is a persistent professor of political science at Texas Tech University, specializes in Venezuelan politics. So, Professor, how did this country that was so oil rich, it has the world's largest oil reserves, why are they doing so poorly?
The problem that Venezuela has had over the years, it's a problem of institutionalization, right? We were the exemplary democracy in the 60s and 70s in Latin America. However, the parties that ruled became too entrenched interests. They did not allow any new blood to come in through the party. That, on top of our constant struggle with oil prices, right? Every time prices drop, our government loses money, and we go into crisis. Our economy goes into crisis. So the political and the economic crisis in the 90s got together, and that generated a significant crisis of the system as a whole. This opened the door for a populist leader with a new speech, with a new new style, with new people to come into the system and to take over.
So it's not that different than what we saw in Mexico when the oil prices dropped. Mexico's economy went into crisis.
Correct. We are an economy that is completely dependent on oil. We haven't been able to diversify, even though that's been the speeches of all of our politicians throughout time, right? We have to diversify. We have to diversify. Well, we haven't been able to diversify. And then Chavez comes in and says we have to diversify, and he does exactly the same thing as we did in the past. He over-relies on oil, spends all the money from oil and different things, from social programs to infrastructure projects to corruption, spends it outside to buy off support from other countries. And then when the prices of oil drop, then we are in a crisis again, right?
But Chavez was also very big on nationalizing of businesses, even mom and pop small businesses. If he saw someone was doing well, he would appropriate it for the government. Basically, free enterprise was under attack in Venezuela. Is that true?
Correct. There was through the crisis, there was a significant state intervention. Right. This is what I was saying before as to the action and reaction kind of the opposition attempted to overthrow the government. The government retaliated. Businesses stopped in an oil strike, and the government retaliated. And so the government decided that it was in its best interest to eliminate private enterprise, and they started intervening, right, without realizing that that was going to take our economy into chaos. And they further intervened. They started with bigger enterprises and with bigger landowners, but nowadays they are intervening in mom-and-pop's bakery store, because instead of selling the normal bread, they're selling another bread so that they can make some money.
Right, because of the price.
We have price controls. All over.
Right, so the price controls with the fixed prices, they do not match what the real market is demanding. So if you go to the store, you can't find bread, you can't find soap, you can't find the flour that you need. And it's because it's selling out the back door at black market prices.
Correct.
So let me see how people are dealing with that.
The usage of price controls has just completely destroyed the economy.
So, Ana Ramos, what are you hearing from your relatives who are in Venezuela? How are they dealing with these lack of either the black market, the fact that price controls, the exchange to the dollar? What do people, how are they operating?
Before, it was easy. We would just send money with, you would send $20 and it would be enough for cover half of the year of supplies. And yes, our relative and people could find supplies in the black market, as you were saying, at high prices, but high prices in bolivars. But when you have the ability to send or help some dollars over, then they will have the ability to find them. The problem now is not even with, doesn't matter how many you have, you cannot find those supplies, not even in the black market. So that's becoming a concern. So it doesn't matter how much money you have, you cannot find supplies.
And so where are they? Is it not even on the black market? Kenny, how are people coping?
Well, I thanks to internet, whatever server we have, it's not the best, but people are communicating, they are exchanging products, basic products and medicine, like my friend mentioned a while ago. That's the way it is working, through social media. I mean, it is sad to see my Twitter account, where you have so many tweets about people needing a medicine, or people who have a medicine who is giving away this medicine. So this is the way, just by helping each other and showing that we are a country who has unity, but also wants freedom in order to abolish all the situation that is going on.
Now, I know that Venezuelans love their country and they don't want to have to leave. But I'm concerned about a refugee crisis, people deciding. We've seen a lot already from Venezuela going to Guyana, Colombia, Brazil, and I'm wondering, but they still have the hope of returning, so they haven't really given up completely. But if a civil war breaks out, will people en masse decide, that's it, I'm done, I'm moving, I'm going to figure out a way to get to Texas or Miami or someplace like that? Ana, do you see that as a possibility?
Absolutely. I think it's actually happening. You know, if you go to the terms, exact term of what a civil war means, both sides need to have weapons and be armed. But I think it's kind of a civil war that's already going on in Venezuela. People are getting killed in the streets. You see a fight between the population and the government forces and the armed forces. And yes, a lot of people have left. Some of them have lost everything. Some of them tried and say, as you said, well, let's wait. Let's leave for a couple of years and see what happens and then go back and still have some assets. And those people have found that, you know, their ranches are taken, their business have been taken by the government. So they have lost everything. So, and I think that's honestly what the government wants. They just want to keep the poor and low-income population that they can manage completely and just do whatever they want.
And Kenny?
Well, it's really sad because just 10 days ago, I have a niece who was pregnant, and there was a national strike, and she went into convulsion. She couldn't reach an ambulance. She couldn't make it to the hospital on time. She lost the baby, and for about a week, she was in the hospital. So it was really sad because this situation would never have happened if we would have a normal country, a country where we have rules of law and democracy.
And so, Professor, when do you think, looking at this arc of how things work and how previous countries have gone through similar crises, what do you think happens next? Do you think we'll reach a point of an actual civil war?
Well, that's a very important question, and it's good. And I don't think I have a great answer for you. The events in Venezuela are evolving at a pace that I don't think anybody can predict, right? Most people would have predicted that after the government gets 8 million votes, they would lower the tone and try to not to try to convince people that things are for the better. But no, they went on the attack.
They went on the attack by seizing the opposition leaders?
Right. They went on the attack by seizing the opposition leaders, by saying that as soon as the National Assembly takes control, they're going to eliminate the Congress and the Attorney General, who flipped from being pro-government to being anti-government. So they threatened political leaders. They've arrested our majors. So what we could expect in the upcoming days is more of that. That is just going to increase the tensions and force the opposition to play a stronger hand, either by calling for a general strike or by calling for indefinite protest. And that can only lead to a further confrontation within the population. So it seems like the cards are there for this conflict to be led into a civil war. Hopefully, the revelations today sort of stop that motion and that inertia, and maybe derail that process and force the government to either cancel out the vote as a whole or cancel the Constituent Assembly until its results can be verified.
And so you're in Argentina, Buenos Aires right now. How are people there? How are they witnessing what's going on in their fellow Southern American country?
Yeah, I think there's a general reaction as to how could all this happen, right? How could you guys get there? There's also a reaction of, we are receiving a lot of Venezuelans, right? In Argentina and Uruguay, there was the same thing. A lot of Venezuelans are going over. They're leaving Venezuela because they can't provide to their families there, and they don't like the current situation a bit. So in order to survive, in order to get health and food, they're migrating. And Venezuela has always been a country receptor of migrants, and not one that sends people over in mass numbers like we're doing right now. So there's a lot of general concern. There's also this ideological strength in which the left, the extreme left, not just in Latin America, but in Europe and in the United States, is still supporting the regime.
Okay.
Because,
and Professor, I'm going to talk about that when we come back from the break. Maduro and and his politics and how those links are across the world. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Our number is 210-614-8980 as we're talking about Venezuela. If you've got family members there, what are they telling you? Give us a call. 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about it used to be one of the richest countries in South America, but now this country has descended into chaos, poverty, mass protest, and a socialist dictatorship. What has happened to Venezuela? How are the people there coping? They can't find food. They can't find medicine. And people are dying. The infant mortality rate there has skyrocketed, as well as the maternal mortality rate. And it is just a country that needs help. We have an organization here in San Antonio, the Venezuelan Association in San Antonio. They're online, and they're accepting donations as they are trying to send care packages back home to their loved ones. So let me ask you, Professor, about what we were getting into before we went to break, about Maduro, the President Maduro's, his alliances that he has around the world. He's closely connected to Russia, North Korea, Syria, and why is that important?
Well, it's important that at least the Russia and the China alliances are important because they are the ones that might be able to help the regime survive economically, right? Although China seems to be trying to distance itself from the crisis and asking for sort of a constitutional situation, and Russia, it has their own crisis as well. So those are timid. They're still there. They can make important allies in like the Security Council or the UN. The most important allies so far, though, have been Latin American countries that have blocked any sort of resolution from the Organization of American States. Right, they're, in order for the Organization of American States to make a decision that a member state broke with the democratic clause of the OAS, 23 member votes need to be cast in favor of that resolution. And so far, they've only gotten to 20 or 21, I think, according to the last count. And that's because Bolivia, Nicaragua, Ecuador, El Salvador, and a few other countries in the Caribbean have been vocal opponents of any such resolution. And the only reason why they've been vocal opponents is because they've been benefited with the sort of petrol policy, we call it in Venezuela, the oil policy we had, in which the Venezuelan state helped other nations with oil in exchange of, like, food or just services in general. And it seems, according to most analysts that study the situation, a lot of the Caribbean nations have big debts with Venezuela. And the Venezuelan state has been pushing to say, well, if you don't want to pay us, don't vote against it. Right? So there's a lot of that economic relationship that has pushed a lot of the countries in the Americas to accept the current regime and all its violations of democracy and the rule of law and human rights. And then you have an ideological component that I still don't understand. I mean, I do understand, but I criticize heavily because the government is not really a socialist paradise or a socialist revolution. In fact, most of the leaders of the government don't lead any socialist life. They're not making any attempts to change the economy from a market economy. They just heavily nationalize things, and that's about it. But there's this idea, there's this idea that Chavez was a big socialist leader, and that they cannot betray that, and as such, they're willing to put up with anything, even things that the left has criticized in the past when they criticize right-wing dictatorships in the Americas. Now they're accepting, right? Violations of human rights by a leftist leader are good. Violations of human rights by a right-wing dictator are bad. So that's the point where we're at right now.
So the president, Nicolas Maduro, he's a former bus driver, worked his way up through the unions, and then became a socialist leader and became the right-hand man of Hugo Chavez. But he knows nothing about economics. And it seems like if you wanted to design how to destroy a country, we know that this is what you do. The price fixing, all these things, they do not. This is not how an economy works.
Correct. What they've been doing is a policy of further controls. It's been a reactionary policy instead of proactive policy to promote growth. Basically, what they've been trying to do is they've been trying to control the economy so that it doesn't go crazy on them. But what they've actually been able to accomplish with that is to make the economy go crazy on them.
It's not an economy. They have no economy anymore, apparently. I'm going to have a caller here. Glenna is on the phone, and let me get her on the line. And Glenna, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
This program is very interesting because Venezuela is very close to my heart. When I first married, we lived in Lagunillas and then in Maracaibo, and then we spent 3 years in Caracas before we came back to the States. My husband was an engineer with Creole Petroleum, and we fell in love with that country. And it breaks my heart with what's going on down there right now. I would like to have a mailing address here in town to send a check for any kind of relief or whatever these people are trying to do to help Venezuela. So I'd like to have a mailing address, and then I would like for them to speak to what is going on, say, in the villages up in the Andes. I've spent a lot of time up in La Mesa de Esnohaki, and I would gather that they are having protests in Maracaibo and Barquisimeto and a lot of other places. Of course, all we're seeing on television here is what's going on in Caracas. So that's about the extent of what I have to ask for.
All right. Well, Glenna, thank you for tuning in. And do you have that address, Kenny?
Yes. If you can go ahead and join us with in the internet at avsatx.com, avsatx.com. Go ahead and click what it says contact. Go ahead and fill out your information, and we'll be glad to go ahead and reach you and collect that check. Also, we want to reiterate that we are collecting basic goods as diapers, formula for babies, because all these goods will be sent to an organization in Venezuela called Enfogate, which is an orphanage that holds 100 kids. And we really appreciate all the help that you can provide. Thank you. And we really appreciate, I'm from Maracaibo, and thank you for talking so highly about Venezuela. We really appreciate it. And thank you so much for taking this time.
And we'll have a link to that website on our website, tpr.org. Ana, so how are people up in the Andes and other parts of Venezuela reacting?
You know, that it's fun, and it's great that Glenda asked, and thank you for the kind words. The Andes, we usually call them gochos. You know, they're very strict people, very well-formed and very rigid in their beliefs. And our most important presidents have been from the Andes. And now what we have seen is that these people from the Andes has been the most amazing and robust protesters that we have seen in the streets. I mean, they do not compare at all. If we do good things in Caracas, you have to see the Andes. They're amazing. In Táchira, Trujillo, Maracaibo. Well, Maracaibo is not the Andes, but still, it's been a very, they are very proud of what their heritage.
Where do you go to get your latest information about what's happening in Venezuela?
Definitely Twitter, and there are some, and Telegram also has some tweets and some information, and I do have some information from other colleagues in Venezuela and around the world that we have joined, trying to join forces and groups and try to share verified information and help the population as well not to fall into fake news or you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of information saying this is all the work of the CIA and the DEA trying to topple the rightful government of Venezuela. And so, you know, there's that's out there. And also, Maduro is, you know, he's giving speeches blasting Trump, that this is Trump trying to take him down, and that apparently, you know, Trump probably doesn't even know who he is, you know.
But, just found out who he is, I think.
Oh, yeah. So, but still, let me ask you that, Professor, about the counter information that the government is providing to Venezuela. And what is the legacy of that information?
Sorry, could you repeat your question?
So there is an official line coming from the government of Venezuela blaming this action, the problem that Venezuela is in trouble, on basically the United States and the CIA.
Yes.
And they're able to, and they're using this because they know that many people in Venezuela are willing to accept that narrative.
Well, not just in Venezuela, right? It's the favorite line of the extreme left. It's the line used by Cuba too. And it's a line that worked in Cuba very well. It did work because the U.S. actually had an embargo on Cuba, mind you. But they've been using this since the times of the coup in 2002, because there was proof that the U.S. government was involved in the coup. They've been holding on to this statement as a way to justify anything that's bad happening in Venezuela. In fact, I'm just reading right now the news that people from the government are claiming that the company that claimed fraud, right, the company that has been doing the voting system since the 2000s, is a company that is has irregularities and a dark past and whatnot. So they're trying to discredit now the company, claiming that actually the votes did happen and this company is just lying to you. So they're using all these communications. They have a very strong control of communications in Venezuela, where they are forbidding penalizing very harshly if TV stations or radio stations or newspapers transmit anything that is not beneficial to the government. But they also have this communicational hegemony outside of Venezuela,
okay,
with different actors in different countries that are willing to continue with the line, with the party line as to how to report on the situation in Venezuela.
Professor, we're going to cut you off there because we're running out of time, and I want to give Kenny one last chance to tell us more about the fundraising dance that you're having for the Venezuelans.
Yes, and that fundraiser is going to take place on August the 18th. And like I said before, you can access our website, avsatx.com, and there is a link right there where you can click on PayPal. Let's say that you don't want to go to the dance, but you want to collaborate, you can go ahead and do make a donation in our PayPal account.
Okay.
Also, you can go ahead and contact and leave a message, and we'll be glad to collect any basic goods that you would like to donate. Thank you so much. Really appreciate this.
All right. We'll have more information on that on our website at tpr.org. All proceeds go to benefit the people who are dealing with this political crisis in Venezuela. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you so much for tuning us in.